Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Mike from Founders Way, Bristol, PA.
Hi, everybody. My name is Mike, and I'm an alcoholic. Cool. You got a clock here, because I probably couldn't see that one on the wall. So I appreciate being asked to come out here. AA is really important to me, even though sometimes my actions don't always show that. You know, like everything that I got that I get to do in AA, like coming out and doing something like this, or working with another alcoholic, taking them through the steps, having a home group, being committed at that home group, being a GSR there, actually attending the GSR meetings. There's a lot of stuff that I've been given through sobriety, through just being an alcoholic, that I never knew how important it would be to me. And doing things like this, like being in service, is it's something that I get to do. And I'm very grateful for it, because I'm the type of person that through the steps, I realized how desperately I really need God in my life, like how important it is for me to have a higher power in my life that I continue to try to seek through actions that I take. And having said that, how important it is for me to have that, I'm also the type of person who will forget just as quickly as I said that, that I even need that. And I have this other thing that comes in right after that where it's like, well, God's not, I'm going to not give God this one, this thing I have to do. I'm going to handle this one. This is maybe too much for God, you know, whatever it is. Or it's just my ego. It's like, well, I want to be God. I don't say those words out loud to myself. I don't even think that way, but my actions are like that. Because I always get into this thing where I try to orchestrate and I try to control stuff and whatever. And it's way more than just like a thought. It's like it turns into chaos real quick. It's basically chaotic as soon as I make that decision, where like the decision I have is where I can have something that happens to me or that I think is happening to me. It's like a thought that I have, a resentment or a fear. And I can either go to God with it and I can say, God, please help me with this, because I know that this is going to become a huge snowball rolling down the hill and it's going to obliterate my life. It's going to totally take me out. And I know that that's the track record. I know that that's what is going to happen with these emotions that come up, and they just become too much after a period of time. But for some reason, every now and again, I have this way of thinking where I don't immediately go to God, and I try to figure it out, or I try to handle the fear, or I try to handle the anger, which is extremely dangerous. Don't, you know, I'm not telling anybody to do that. If you've ever tried that, then you know how dangerous it is already. Like judgments and stuff like that. I don't know if you guys ever tried that, like judging people, and like resentment, if you ever tried that, playing with a resentment in your head, or like a fear and like recirculating it through your mind. And it's chaos. You know, it's just crazy. You know, so doing something like this, especially like an hour speaker meeting for somebody who desperately needs God's help, but will forget it as soon as I walk out the door, this is like an opportunity for me to keep telling that to like all you guys and to myself for an hour straight, which is like the kind of thing I need to do, like, because I really need to beat it in my head. But I also have to take this stuff with me. You know, I think like all of us, like, going to a meeting is great. I've always had the experience where, like, I'm thinking about going to a meeting, and I don't want to go to the meeting. Oh, man, well, I could probably do this instead, or do that, whatever. And then I go to the meeting, and I sit in the meeting, and by the end of the meeting, I'm like, man, I feel great. I'm really glad I went to that meeting. Like, I've always had that experience. But These are great, but I have to also take this stuff out with me. It has to go with me everywhere I go. Like they say about in the big book, they say like this line that spirituality, this faith, dependence in God has to work in and through us 24 hours a day, otherwise we perish. And that's what happens to me. So the steps allow me to do that if I continue to keep practicing them. And one of the best ways for me is like being in service like this, talking about the steps, what they've done in my life. More importantly, like sitting down with somebody one-on-one. Sponsorship is really, really important for me. And it's been the best thing that I've ever been able to get to do in my life. And I never knew that being an alcoholic was going to be such a, like a gift to where I actually get to be able to do that with somebody. So if you're in here and maybe like there was somebody who was new, I strongly encourage you to get a sponsor and to go through these steps and to become a sponsor. or reach your hand out to somebody else. And anybody who's had that experience will tell you 100% that it's the best thing that's ever happened to them, is to be able to sit down with somebody, even sometimes just to listen to somebody, to listen differently, rather than like the old listening I would do is like somebody tell me a resentment that they have or like some kind of stuff going on in their life. I'm co-signing it. We're both coming up with a plan that's going to land everybody in jail. And it's just a bad time all around. And then now it's like going through these steps and having a little bit of awareness about myself and the way that my mind works, the defects of character I have, like this, these six and seven steps like we've talked about, getting to know a little bit more about myself. I get to know about other people too. And I hear somebody telling me a problem. And it's this awesome thing happens when you have somebody and you're just listening to them. They have this issue. They have a problem. They call you. They're sitting in the meeting, whatever. If you practice listening, you find out that they tell you this problem that they have, and then they tell you the answer somewhere throughout rambling about the problem. And if you can listen to them, you can just repeat back the answer that they already said. Because like this fundamental idea of God is inside everybody, and it's just blocked. And sometimes I say things out loud that I don't realize I'm saying. But if I have people around me that are into this, into the program, they repeat that answer back to me. Sometimes maybe they give me a little bit more based on their experience. And that was such a godsend to have that, to have a sponsor, to have people, a network of people that I could talk to and I could bring my issues and my problems to them. And they give me a way out. Like I realized I don't have to be stuck just by myself all the time anymore. And like what a gift that is to when you realize that. And that's what AA is for me. And then getting to the place where like you actually get to be the person on the other end where you listen to this person, they think the sky's falling and it's the end of the world and oh my God, I'm going to die in 5 minutes. So, like all that kind of stuff that goes on in their head. And you get to be there for them and maybe say a couple things or repeat some stuff back that they said. And you watch people change. You watch the fear dissipate. You watch them go to their God and try to connect. You watch them let go of all this burden. And you watch people as they go through their course of sobriety and they start to change mentally and they start to change physically and most importantly spiritually. And every time I'm sitting down with somebody and I watch those things happen, I know that there's proof, there's evidence in front of me that God's working in their life. And of course he's going to work in my life. And I know he's working in my life because I feel it as I'm watching them change. And it's just, it's a gift to be able to do these kind of things, to be here and to be a part of this whole thing. But like I said, that all sounds great, and like, what'll happen when I get back on the turnpike? You know, is the guy hitting his brakes and there's nobody in front of him and I'm yelling at him in the car? Like, maybe I'm saying it out loud. Maybe I'm just saying it in my head. Now, he's never going to hear it, so all the great stuff I'm telling him and how I'm telling him how to drive, he's never going to learn how to perfectly drive. He can't even hear the instructions I'm giving him. And the only thing I'm doing is I'm making myself upset and disturbed, and I'm getting myself in a really bad spot. And when I'm in that bad spot, all that stuff I just talked about that sounds real great, flowery and spiritual, all that stuff, it's out the window. It's nowhere to be found. And I'm on a collision course with myself and into the world, you know, against everybody. And that's like such a dangerous spot to be in. And, you know, I get to it maybe a little bit later, but more recently in my experience in life, I've had some pretty, you know, pretty big, like, hitting the wall moments and some pretty big surrender experiences as of in this year. And I'm just grateful for AA. I'm grateful for the tools that I've been given that I get to practice that have absolutely carried me through every single situation I've ever gone through in my whole life, in my whole sobriety. And I used to, I mean, I would get a Comcast bill in the mail and I'd be like, I'm drinking over this. What, $200? Like, who's going to pay $200 for cable? And like, all this crazy stuff would come up in my head. Like, I didn't order that. And like, you know, whatever. And it was always a great excuse to go get a couple 40s or go get, you know, a bottle of Laird's or like, you know, a handle of Old Granddad and just drink that until I can't feel my face anymore. You know, everything and anything I could find to just deaden myself to the world was a perfect excuse to go drink. And I've had crazy stuff happen in my life that is like way past like a normal bill, you know, coming in the mail. And I haven't even had the thought that drinking is going to be a good idea. And at the end of my drinking, I was drinking every single day, and there was not a time where I could not drink unless somebody like got in the way. like cops or my probation officer or my mom or, you know, whoever. But most of the time I even tried to, you know, skirt around them, and I always somehow made it work. And it was just bad. It was so bad. Like, at the end of my drinking, my every day would basically be, at some point I went up to this liquor store and I got either a bottle of Vladimir. Like, what would happen is, if I was doing pretty good and I had a whole bunch of change that I could scrounge up and I could afford the $7 liter top shelf Vladimir, I would go buy that. And if I couldn't, if I wasn't doing as good, somehow I'd make enough to get like the $5 bottle of Laird's, you know, the fifth. And I go and I go up there and I go get that. And if it was far along enough, like as it kept going on, I just had to drink sooner and sooner as soon as I got that bottle in my hand. Like when I first started doing it, I could wait and I could like be dignified, wait till I got home and get the pineapple soda, which was my favorite mixer, and I had the big 7-Eleven Slurpee cup, you know, the hard one with like the hologram thing that you could rewash, and they're huge, and like get that. That was my favorite drinking cup, and I pour it up like maybe halfway, maybe three quarters of the way with pineapple soda, and then the rest of it with vodka. And then as I'm drinking, it's like less and less pineapple soda, and until it's like just about straight vodka, you know, so I can't taste it no more. And I used to be able to wait till I could get home, and then it started to get to the point where like I get the bottle, and you know, I'm taking like a couple of swigs or whatever on the ride, you know, driving home, because that's legal, you know. But that's, you know, who would think about that? But it's like I'm doing all this stuff because I have to do it. And then it progressed a little bit further. I crashed the car, which is how I got the scar on my face. And I'm riding the bicycle up there, and then so I grabbed the bottle, and I'm going back in the woods, and I'm drinking that. Like, conveniently, there's these little woods that are right there by the liquor store, so I don't have to go that far. And like, and I'm just hanging out in there, you know, hanging out. I'm homeless, and I have nowhere to go. And I'm on this pedal bike, you know, and it's awesome. You know, my life is great because I have this bottle with me. When I don't have the bottle with me, oh my God, I'm homeless, and like I'm on a bicycle, and like I'm all scarred up, and like the reality of my life is full force in my face. And it pushes me to the point where I have to go drink again. Because I just can't stand thinking about me and thinking about my life and feeling what it feels like to be inside of my skin 24 hours a day, minute after minute. Like, it's just such a horrible, like, thing, like a prison that I'm just stuck in. But I have this answer. I have this one answer that'll get me out of it. It's to go drink. And whatever it is I'm drinking at the time, I just go do that. And man, I would have that cup, right? And it's, some of you guys know, you laugh, like it's a big cup, right? It's like that's a big drink that you're drinking. And especially like when I'm starting to mix it, like heavier and all that. But every day, I had this weird thing that would happen to me. And even when I was doing shots, like on the ride home, I would take a shot or I'd take my first sip of that drink. And I felt relief. Like I almost felt like I was already starting to get drunk. And there's no way that I'm physically drunk off of that first shot or that first sip. But I just knew that I was going to be okay. I had this faith and this trust in a liquid that it was going to take away all my problems. And I depended on that so heavily that was like everything to me. That's where like that line in the big book where they say alcohol had become my master, I get that 100% because that was it for me. And I depended so heavily on that. And what it does is it causes you to push everything to the wayside. You know, the family, the jobs, anything and everything. You know, we all have our stories and everything that we sacrifice to come in here. But this problem that I have, the biggest problem I have that happens up in my mind is that I never think about that. I never think about the pain. I never think about, like, I would go to jail over and over and over again. And I had this routine where it was like the week prior to me getting out, I'm excited because I'm going to go drink. And I'm thinking about the party I'm going to have that I'm throwing myself, like it's college graduation or something. And, you know, I'm thinking, like, I just can't wait to get to it. Now, mind you, like, my track record is, like, I drink, I make it on the streets for about a month, maybe 2 months tops, and then I'm back in jail again. I get locked up. But that doesn't, like, register in my head. And all I can think of is that feeling that I get from drinking, because I'm currently sober and I'm sitting in my own skin, and that's what I'm stuck with, and I can't stand that feeling, and I don't know any other way to get out of it other than to go drink. But I can't put it together. I can't somehow remember like that, all right, it's going to cause some problems here. Like it just is always this answer for me. So I'm on this like rat wheel and I just can't get off of it. And luckily I have all this stuff that goes down in and out of jail. And, my mom kicks me out of the house where I'm staying with her. And it got bad. It just got so bad. It like just got worse than it ever had been before that. And, she kicks me out. I'm bouncing around, staying on whatever couch I can and all this stuff and anywhere I could stay. And I had this woman, I had two women that were three, including my mom, three women that were like in my life. My mom was like kind of like on the outside of it. I really couldn't stand to talk to her or to see her because she'd be crying instantly and it was just, it was hard to see that, but I knew that I was the cause of it. But that wasn't enough to get me to stop. And then I had another woman who was in my life who was like, kind of like, basically hanging on by a thread, barely wanted to talk to me at all. But I had this one that was like, always wanting to talk, always wanting to meet up. I hated it because it was always like, really tense whenever I had to meet up with her. I always wanted to go to her office. She was my probation officer. And she like called me this one day, and I was hoping it was the other girl like hanging on by the thread, and it wasn't her, it was the PO, and she calls me and says, do yourself a favor. I heard about everything that happened, your car crash, your last toxicology report came back. I don't even know how you're having you're coherent. I don't even know how you're alive. There's chemicals in there it's like, I don't know what you're doing. I mean, I get my hands on everything and anything that I can. And, I mean, like starter fluid and carburetor cleaner and like whatever. You just, if it's there and I'm drunk enough, it's going to happen. And it's just crazy. I don't even know what happens to me. It's just, who knows, And it's all just to get out of my mind. And, she calls me, she says, do yourself a favor and turn yourself into the jail. And it was a favor, cause I'm homeless, like in jail now is like a step up, like that's pretty bad. Like when jail is like a better situation than where you currently are. So I'm like, oh man, I gotta go back to jail again. Like this sucks. Like I hate it up there. And, I used to think it was real cool. Like I was 19, was the first time I got locked up. I have a brother, and two sisters, and my brother, they're all like 20 and 21 years older than I am. My brother was in the picture in my life when I was like in kindergarten and first grade, and then he got locked up, and then that's just where he stayed. He's got a lot of issues, alcoholism and a lot of other stuff on top of that. So he's got like murder charges and crazy stuff, and so like he spent more than half of his whole life in jail. And that's what I knew about jail when I was growing up. So I looked up to my brother because my dad was never around, and that's the only male image that I had. So I used to think like, all right, going to jail, like the first time I got locked up, it was basically they picked me up because I didn't pay a fine for ARD. ARD is like the slap on the wrist before you get real probation. Like you got to pay this fine, and they basically say like, you're in trouble, and like that's it. And like I didn't pay this fine. It was like $400. And I avoided that thing, so they came out to the house, the constable came out and all that, and they locked me up. I'm thinking, bad, and I'm 19, like, total goofball at the time, and like, they take me to jail, and I'm in there for like 24 hours. And I'm like, all I know about jail and prison and all that is my brother went there, so now I'm like him, so I'm cool, and then, I get out, pay the fine, and then I go back in again, like, maybe a year or so later, because now, like, my alcoholism progressed pretty quickly, and I had this DUI. I bought a street bike. I had all this money. I got in this car accident. I broke both my legs and a couple other bones. And they gave me this accident settlement like almost a year later for $103,000. And I was like, I figured that was it. Like that's the answer. This is like what I needed was a bunch of money, So I buy this car that like's got all this stuff done to it. I never even got the title for it. I don't have a license. Like I got my license suspended when I was 18 for underage drinking. That wasn't enough. I didn't learn from that. And I just figured, oh, screw them. I'll just keep driving anyway. And then they keep pulling me over and I get another year added on, another year suspension added on. And so I get pulled over. I get this DUI. When I had all this money, I always wanted a street bike, but I was so used to being so cheap from being an alcoholic. So I bought a cheaper street bike, which was stolen. And, so I crashed that and I get charged with receiving stolen property. It was like a felony and all this other crazy stuff. And then I land in jail and I'm in there for probably like about 6 months or so. and, you know, nothing too bad happened. I got in real tight with all the cool guys on the block, right, the cool people in jail. What is that, you know? And I'm cooler now, you know, in my mind, and I'm just, like, more insane, really. And, like, and you know, they're talking about all the ways that they party, and I'm learning new stuff, and that's cool. And, like, and it's just, it's insane. And it just doesn't stop. And I keep going back to jail. And then luckily for me, the more times I kept going back, I became less and less cool. I started to kind of, like, grow up a little bit and start to see, like, what was really happening and what my life was really about. And so by the time, this last time I had to go back, I hated it. And I was 24. I finally was, like, old enough, or I don't want to say mature enough, because I still don't think I'm that mature now. But, like, I was clear-headed enough. I had a moment of clarity where I was like, this sucks. You know, my life is horrible. I hate it. There's nothing fun about this. And it's like, how do I stop? And I never got to a place where I was like, I never questioned my drinking, because I never wanted to. But the thing I used to ask myself was like, how do I stop going to Bucks County Prison? How do I stop going there? Like friends of mine having these like 5-year plans and like going to college and having these good jobs. And my 5-year plan is like, how do I stop getting locked up and going to Bucks? And that's like all I could come up with. And when I was 19, and I used to have this friend, and it was a weird friendship. Like I would like give him Adderall that was prescribed, and he'd go give me 40s. But when I didn't have the Adderall, he was like non-existent. Like he just poof was gone. So it was like weird friendship. I had a whole bunch of those like that. And so one of these times when he wasn't around, I started like I'm like kind of like MacGyver when I start to drink. Like I think I can like do all this stuff with electronics, and like I think I'm like Emeril Lagasse. I try to make weird concoctions. Like, you know, I one time made ground beef and poured like a whole thing of salt and ketchup on it, and I thought that was Sloppy Joe, and I'm eating that, and I'm like I'm nuts, and I'm crazy, like doing all this crazy stuff. And one of the days I'm like experimenting and looking for a new way to get out of my head. And I go into this little shed thing that I have where the lawnmowers are, and there's like starter fluid in there and carburetor cleaner. And I learned somewhere throughout my learning experience and the people I run into that, like if stuff says like caution may be harmful or fatal if ingested, like that also gets you out of your head somewhat like alcohol. So I start spraying this stuff on rags because I couldn't get any 40s from this guy. I'm 19. I can't buy any alcohol at the time. And I'm breathing this stuff in, and I'm doing it so much. Like I do it like in the morning, first thing when I wake up, kind of like when I would drink. And when I wasn't doing it, it was kind of like at the end of my drinking. When I wasn't doing it, I'd start to shake really bad. And the only thing that kind of calmed the shaking down is to huff this stuff again. And so I went, and I knew that wasn't the best thing in the world. So I told my mom. She totally overreacted and like flipped out, called like the family doctor, and they 302'd me in this little rehab thing. And all I remember from that place was that I went in there, and I remember like I wasn't an alcoholic. All these people were saying they can't stop drinking on their own power. I'm like, BS, you know, just stop. Like I could stop. Like, what are you crying for? You can't stop drinking. Like all this stuff. Like I remember one guy saying that he had to leave his whole family and go down to Florida for long-term treatment. And this dude was pouring his eyes out in this group that we're having. And I share after him, like, what do you want, like sympathy or something? Like, dude, just stop. Stop doing it. Stop drinking. Like, what do you want? Oh, you're powerless, all this crap. Like, you know, that's about as much as I thought, you know. And now I'm 19, and I'm in there for huffing carburetor cleaner, right? Like, and I'm thinking, like, you know, just stop doing it. Like, what's your problem, you know? Have some self-control. And like I'm just insane. And so like, but I remember that there was this girl who's kind of cute, and she was like, we're out in the yard, she's literally spiking my hair one day, and like, so I got her phone number, and they had like really good food there, and you could wear your own clothes. And so that's like all I remember out of this place. So when I was 24, my PO says turn yourself into jail. I remembered that place. And on top of that, like I learned through incarcerations that there's this thing called time served. You can go to like treatment or, you know, work something out, and you don't have to go to jail for as long, or sometimes you don't even have to go to jail at all. You go to wherever. You just say you've got a problem, and, you know, that you'll be good. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to do that. And I went to the local hospital. I said I was going to kill myself, and I mentioned that I heard about this place, Hampton Hospital, that's really good. Can I go there? You know, that was the place I was at. And so they sent me over there, and it was great. You know, it was everything that I needed. Now the place is a dual diagnosis detox unit. right? So really the program only lasts for like a week. They load you up on a whole bunch of meds, you shuffle around, maybe you drool a little bit, and then you leave after a week. Well, they had this great thing there that worked in my benefit, and it was this thing called contract for safety. And it just means that you're not going to hurt yourself or anybody else. And they give you like the sheet with all the faces on it, like what are you feeling today? And so mine was always sad and depressed, and like I would write down like I'm going to hurt myself, you know, I can't leave yet, like da, da, da. And really in the back of my head, it's like I got to really stretch this thing out so I don't have to go to jail. And so I got to eat the great food there for that much longer, like probably like four times longer than anybody else. I stayed for a whole month, and I got to hear the same presentations over and over again, and it was great. And I didn't really remember too much from it, except for this old guy that would come in from AA. There was two things. I was going to go to NA at first. There was this girl that used to come in there, and she always used to want to give me a hug, and she was pretty cute, and like so I was going to do NA because maybe I'll meet her out there. But then this guy came in. He would come in from AA, and I used to hate him because this was like one of those like you know upscale treatment centers where like. We didn't get like the coin or like the certificate when you get out, like a lot of them do, but they would give us our belt and our shoelaces back. And it was great. It was perfect for me. Like it was exactly what I needed. And this guy used to come in and he knew that that's what they did, that we didn't have that. And so he had this opening joke and it was hilarious to him. He'd say, I'm just like all you guys in here. I'm an alcoholic too. The only difference between me and you is I still have my shoelaces on. And he'd laugh, and he laughed really hard, and he really thought that was funny every single time he said it. And I hated him more and more and more every time that he said this joke, and I knew the guy's going to come in, you're going to tell the stupid shoelace joke. And I'm in the back, you know, propped up in the corner, and I'm like judging everybody else with their share and all this stuff. And dude's coming in, shoelace guy. And I don't know what happened. I hated myself so bad this one day that like I just was forced to listen. I couldn't stay up here any longer. I couldn't keep judging people. I just listened to what this guy said. And he talked about all the time. He was just happy to be there with us. And something just stuck. And he always would keep saying, get a sponsor when you get out of here. I didn't know what that meant. This is my first time in AA. Since I got sober. When I got sober, it was March 12, 2008. I never tried this stuff before. I've never, like, I mean, I maybe, like, vaguely heard about AA on, like, a movie or something like that. So this guy's saying, you got to get a sponsor. The only thing I knew about sponsor is, like, back when I was in, like, elementary school, we always used to read BMX Plus and, like, they talk about how you get sponsored if you're a really good BMX rider. And, like, that's what I thought. Like, I didn't know, like, anything else. I'm like, all right, so you got to get, like Fox Racing or somebody like that's going to sponsor me when I get in here. And it wasn't anything like that. It was just, like, you get this tour guide, basically, who's going to take you through the steps and explain this program to you. And he started to explain that as he said it. But he would always say it, like, you got to get a sponsor. As soon as you get out of here, get to your first meeting, raise your hand, say you're new out of treatment and you need a sponsor. And he would always say that. And the other thing on top of that is he would talk about the steps. Now, I didn't remember. It didn't like stick with me all the words that he used when he talked about the steps. But what really resonated with me was how this guy was. There was something different about him. He was really happy to be there. He was excited to be there with us. And I could feel it. That was like my first like, seeing a spiritual awakening in somebody and first understanding of it was just watching it. Because this dude was different. He was happy. And I believed him. I believed everything he said. And when he talked about his experience of being an alcoholic, I could identify with that. He talked about how he drank and why he always went back to it and how no matter how bad the problems got, he always went back anyway, even when he didn't want to. And right before this last time, I had that moment. I'm following the girlfriend. I'm at her mom's house. I'm saying, I'm not going to go back to jail anymore. I know what I got to do. I'm not going to do it. And in my mind, it was like, one of my things that I would do is like, I would get drunk and I'd army crawl in my mom's room. And she was prescribed Valium to help her go to sleep. She'd take like a little half of a pill. And, so she barely ever took these things. So she had like this stockpile of them. So I'd like grab that, be taking like 13 of them at a time and drinking a liter of vodka a day. And that was like my end, the end of my drinking. And And I knew that when I drank, basically what I knew was I would take the Valium and then I'd go smoke something or I could do this, could do that. So, and I would always fail my urine tests with my PO because of all the substances in there. But alcohol doesn't show up, so alcohol is good, right? That's cool. So like that's how I equated it. Like I thought like, all right, I can't do these other, like drugs are bad, okay? Like I can't do that. Like that's illegal. Like we got to stay away from that stuff. But drinking, like I'm not, you know, drinking's not a problem. Like if I'm an alcoholic, then everybody's an alcoholic because everybody drinks, right? Like that's about as far as I went with it. And this guy, the way he explained his alcoholism, he got me to connect with him. And for the first time, I had that light bulb moment where I'm like, that's it, I'm an alcoholic. Like everything starts with me when I start drinking. That's where my problem is. And I never put it together on my own because I never wanted to look at it because of how much alcohol really did for me. But this guy was like my intervention. He was like my first step. And he explained his alcoholism, and I identified with him. And not only did he talk about this problem and had me relate with him there, but he gave me a solution. And he gave me a solution in a way that it was so attractive that when I got out, when I got out of treatment, I had to go to jail after that, I got right into what I needed to do. Now, alcoholism still tried to work on me, though. And here's what happens with me. The problem is definitely in my mind. Like, that's where it kicks off. So I had the eureka moment. I'm an alcoholic in jail. I call a friend of mine. I call the girl who's hanging on by a thread. I figured it out. I know how I'm not going to go to jail anymore. I'm an alcoholic. I can't drink. I'm going to go to AA, right? And I'm excited about that. I'm so excited to be an alcoholic now. So I get out of the treatment center. I go to jail for 60 days, and I'm going to AA meetings as much as I can. And it's not just to get off the block. It's like I really want to be there. I'm sharing my newly pronounced alcoholic heart out. Who knows what the hell I'm sharing. And like, but I'm excited to be there, and I'm just going to tell everybody about it. And then it's a week prior to me getting out. I'm on the phone with the girl, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to be getting out like next Friday, which is a setup. You know, it's like I got this recovery house lined up because other than that, I'm homeless. And in my PO, like, I can't be homeless. So I got to go to this recovery house. I'm forced to do that. And I read this like pamphlet that they got, and there's a pool on there. So that was cool. And then, but I'm reading all about it, and it's like, oh man, I got to get a job. I got to be on this like job search. What the hell is a job search? Like, got to do that for 21 days. I can't use the phone. What's a blackout? I got to be on blackout. Like, I'm like, man, this is like jail part two. What the hell is this? And I'm talking to her about like, all right, I'm going to go to the recovery house. You know, I can't wait to get there, you know. But I really miss you so much, and I love you. And, like, we should go get, like, a hotel room. And, you know, I really want to see you when I get out. I don't, you know, I'm trying to get something from her. I don't, there's no love there. I don't know. I don't have the capacity to do that, you know, at that time. And she's like, no, go into the recovery house. And she was with me for the whole last year of my drinking. And I really drugged this woman through the dirt. Bad. And so she was just burnt, and she just was loving enough that she just wanted to make sure I was in a place where I was safe and I wasn't going to die. And she's like, go right in the recovery house. And like, oh, come on, like, let's just go, we'll go get to the hotel and we'll party a little bit. She's like, what do you mean party? I'm like, well, I'll get like a six pack of Corona and like a lime, you know, something sophisticated. I'm not going to drink vodka anymore, don't worry, you know. Like, I thought you were an alcoholic. Like, what happened to that whole thing? You know, you just said that, like, what, 2 months ago? Like, you were so excited about that. And what happened was I'm an alcoholic, you know, and I forgot that I'm an alcoholic. I had this first step experience, but I didn't get a sponsor. I didn't have anything else that followed behind that. And how quickly did I forget what my problem was? How quickly did I forget about all that, the answer that I found, and all the light that was going on in the sky and all that stuff? It was just out the window because, it was just built in to me that I need to go back and go drink again. And she was like, just go in this recovery house or I'm going to break up with you. She's really hot. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to go in this recovery house. Fine. Like, just don't leave me. You know, like, I can't deal with the abandonment. So I go into the recovery house and she breaks up with me. And it was the best thing that could happen because between, like, you know, crying and whining at the house meetings about how she left me, I got the sponsor, so I'm crying to him about that. He doesn't really want to hear it. He's all this, like, step Nazi. He wants to take me through the steps real quick. And he wants to tell me about these traditions that we have, too, and the history of AA. He's so excited about stuff that happened in, like, 1930s. Like, All right, dude, chill. Like, he's running around. It's like June. He's got flip-flops, sunglasses on. 6 months later, it's December. There's snow on the ground. He's got the same flip-flops and sunglasses on. He still loves AA. Taking me to all these places, going on these road trips. And I got to experience the whirlwind of sobriety, early sobriety. And I was ingrained in these steps. And I just jumped right in. And there was no hesitation on it. There was no, like, you know, he didn't force my nose in the book either. But I wanted it. More and more, as I started to let go more and more of myself, by going to these meetings, by meeting up with him, by being surrounded by the guys in the recovery house who were doing this thing too, who encouraged me and pushed me in a loving way to keep going on with this program, I wanted more and more of it because I started to let go of more and more of myself. And I started to be filled with what the program had to offer. And that whole process gives you a whole bunch of energy. So I'm doing this thing, and I do this inventory, and I'm just trying to do everything to the best of my ability with my heart, just honestly. So I go out, and I start making these amends, and I get that experience. Like, the amends process for me, that was like the turning point in my recovery where I started to really lose a lot of my fear, and I started to really experience life in a different way. And going back to these people, and I mean, don't get me wrong, there's amends that I've tried to make. I have a daughter who I had when I was 19, and I was insane in that treatment center, and it was a crazy time. And I made it to about her second birthday of being in her life, but I would cause fights with her mom when we lived together over like nothing. You know, I'd make stuff up because she didn't want me to drink in the house, so I caused a fight with her so I could leave and go drink. And I started going in and out of jail for longer and longer periods of time, and she picked up and left. And I tried reaching out to her numerous times, even up until recently. And never got a chance to make that amends yet. Never got a chance to repair that damage. But what happened with me as I went through and I made these amends, and there was people that I did approach who I could make it with, there was always this energy that came with it. There was always this feeling of like, I'm not holding on to that burden anymore. And there was something that changed inside of me to where I know that these other amends, the other people that are out there I haven't been able to meet with, when I am able to meet with them, I'm not afraid anymore. I don't have to run from, like, my old MO was like, if I see in a person that, like, I would have had to make amends with, like in the mall or something, like my daughter's mom, I saw her one time, like, coming to the mall, and I, like, had to duck into, like, it was either like a Children's Place or Victoria's Secret, a store that I'm not supposed to be in by myself. And so, like, but I'm in there hiding because I can't see this person face to face, or like can't even talk to them on the phone. Got to hit end all the time. I don't have that today. I don't have that fear. I don't have to run from anything. I don't have to. Sometimes I will if I build up the fear in my mind. If I push God out and I decide, like, all right, I'm going to handle this thing on my own. And it just becomes insane up to the point where I'm like on my knees begging God for help. But luckily he's always there. My experience has been that God's never left me. And has been there in all the times that I didn't even think that he would be there. Because my sobriety, like my whole track record, is just a bunch of mistakes. I don't have like a bunch of like Gucci spiritual stories and like all this stuff. I've had things that have happened to me. Not things I've gone out and done. I've had things that God has done for me, and it's just evidence that there's something working for me. Like my sobriety, like I didn't make a decision to get sober. I had that PO who, you know, we had a loving relationship, you know, and she calls me and says, do yourself a favor. I didn't know how big of a favor I was doing myself by taking her suggestion. I had no idea. That whole thing, like, and everything after that, sobriety for me has been like a whole bunch of like situations where it's like I'm on the fence about it. I don't know if this is a good idea or not, but I just give up and I just do it anyway because the people around me are doing it. They're getting results. My sponsor's really excited about me doing this next thing that I'm supposed to be doing. I don't want to let him down. And so I just do it. And I'm blown away by the experience I get to have. That much more of me gets to be let go, the negative stuff, all that stuff that I'm carrying around, the burdensome stuff. Everything I had to drink over just gets taken away, little by slowly. And it seems like through the course of my sobriety, it's like year after year, there's another thing that I come to terms with. It's kind of like how these middle steps, like 6 and 7, what we were talking about earlier, how they work in my life. And there's always something else that has to be let go if I want to keep going further. And usually I experience that through pain. I usually have some kind of blow up, some kind of something that happens. And it's a decision I have to make. What am I going to do now? Am I going to trust God that much more? You know, just when I thought I trust him 100%, I realized that there's even more of myself that can be let go. But if I can do that, and it's not even like perfectly, it's not like this like formula that I have, I just say, God, I need your help. Sometimes I'm crying my eyes out and I'm begging him. And I'm just saying, I can't do this. I know that I can't do this without you. And there he is. And he gets me on my feet again. And this program has given me directions to take where I can spend my time rather than sitting in my head and wallowing in self-pity. I can go work with a sponsor. I can go to a meeting. I can be in service. There are a million different things that I can do to keep myself moving. Not busy, not distracted, but moving. Because of the actions that I take that change who I am. They change my spirit. Everything just gets... all that pain and that drama and the tragedy, everything that, oh my God, it's the world's ending. Like, I can't do this now. And, you know, I might as well just take myself out of here. If I give up and give myself back into these steps, into the program, I'm carried through that again. That next thing that I could, that was impossible. I can't do it. Because it's true. I can't do it by myself. But I don't have to do anything by myself anymore because I have Alcoholics Anonymous now. And I never knew how much of a gift that was going to be. And I've had moments like in sobriety where I'm sitting in a meeting. And I remember I was at my old home group and this guy Sheldon was out. He's like a really funny guy. I like listening to him talk. And I remember having like this out of body experience. Like it's like Thursday night, 8 o'clock. I'm like, what the hell am I doing in an AA meeting? How did I get to AA? Am I even really an alcoholic? Like maybe I just like blew that stuff out of proportion. You know, maybe is God real? Maybe I've just been keeping myself sober. You know, I have some crazy stuff that happens up here, even with all the experiences I've had. And there's this thing that, like, just keeps fighting for control, whether it's my ego, my pride, that, like, builds up slowly over time, and I have this big blow-up again, and then more of that has to be let go of. There's this thing that's just struggling inside, that it just, it's where I want to be God. And I won't say that. I won't say that outwardly because then the jig is up. Now I know what's going on. But I have this thing that tricks me into acting that way, that I want to be God. But it'll, at the same time as I'm doing that, I'll say, oh, I need God's help. I need God's help. You know, I'm like the biggest liar to myself. So that's why my actions have to be in this, in the program. Like, you know, aligning yourself with God's will. Like taking all the, I love the, in the third step in the big book. How they're talking about how we get to God's will and how exactly do we turn our will and our life over to God. They don't like give you this whole like rundown of like this is what God's will is, because you know me personally, like I'll argue that to the death and I'll never get to experience the rest of the program. So instead they're like, this is what you do, and that's me, like all self-centeredness and fear and this actor running the whole show and all that. At any given moment, especially when I got some problems going on, I can open that big book and I can read page 60 to 63 and there I am all over again. And it just smacks me right in the face and it's like it's brand new every single time. And the best experience is when I'm reading it with somebody else and they're getting something out of it. I'm getting something out of it at the same time. I share about what I'm getting out of it. They share their thing. And now it even got deeper than me just reading it by myself. That's another gift of the program, that I'm never alone. Unless I choose to shut myself off from this sunlight of the spirit. And I don't go out. And I don't connect with these other people. But the more that I'm into this, I just have these things that just keep happening and happening. And they're happening for me and to me. It's not stuff that I'm going out and doing. I get to be here. And then I get to just tell other people about what happened to me. And I get to keep making mistakes and doing dumb stuff all the time. Being an idiot. And I keep reporting about it and like what God has done, what AA has done in my life. And it's great. It's like they say in the 12 and 12, there's a line and they say as this insurance against big shotism, we know that any success we're having in our sobriety is more God's success than our own personal. And I know that for a fact because that's just what it is. It's like, I'm not doing any of this stuff. This stuff is just being done for me. I started to really see that and think that way quite a few years back. I mentioned my dad was never in my life. He reached out to me when he tried calling my house when I was like 11 or 12, and my mom got in a fight with him, hung up. And then he wrote me a letter, and I got it when I was 18. And I started drinking when I was 16. That was, you know, I was a pretty late bloomer compared to all my friends. But I was insane. I mean, we went down the seaside, we were drinking down there. I'm like, you know, this tall. I was on the 85-pound wrestling team class like the year before that. So I'm nothing, and I'm down there. I start drinking. I'm trying to fight everybody, and I'm crazy. And, like, and the last thing I remember from that night was everything was pre-mixed in this pitcher, and they just had to pour it out in the little red party cups, and you just drank it, and that's it. So after I'm wasted, I come and I grab my cup with the drink, good to go, and I grab the vodka and I start spiking my own drink. And like that was my first time drinking. Don't even know how to drink, but I know how to be an alcoholic. And it's been like that ever since then. So I progressed really fast, and it was as much as I can get in my body as fast, you know, I need it yesterday. And so when I was 18, I was just full of anger towards my dad. He was never there. I had this feeling of abandonment towards him and pain and all this stuff. And he wrote me this letter, and he said a whole bunch of stuff, and the only thing that stuck out to me was this line where he was telling me about his sobriety. I didn't know what sobriety was. I couldn't even put any of that stuff together, but I saw him say God, you know, in the way that he said it. And I thought he was trying to tell me I need to find God to be happy, and I was basically like, F you, you know, you should have been here. I was an altar boy, you know, I went to Catholic school, like, I was really ingrained. My mom used to read to me from the Bible and teach me how to pray, and like, so I was like, I know God. Like, the only classes I got A's in were gym and religion class. Like, and I went to Catholic school at one point and then CCD at night at the same time. CCD is like rehab after work for Catholics. Like, for people who go to like public school, like, you go to CCD to learn about God at night. But I was getting this stuff ingrained. So I'm like, dude, you want to tell me about God? You should have been here. Like, I know God. And so I get sober, and my sponsor says, all right, you got to pray for your dad. I see him. He's on your resentment list here. And I'm like, yeah, all right, whatever. And like, I'm still justified. I'm holding on to that. I kind of did like a half little prayer for him, whatever, and then that's kind of it. Then one day I'm in a nine-step meeting, and they talk about the appropriate way to make amends with people. And they say that when you go to meet with these people, it's probably not a good idea to come out, shout you found God and all this stuff. They say it's kind of like if you're in a fight, you're like putting your face out, and it's not the best position for you to be in. So you might prejudice them. You might upset this person and cause more harm. And something happened where it just clicked. I didn't think about that letter from my dad at all up until that point. And I just remembered it, and I'm like, man, what if that's what he was doing? Like, my mom used to love to, she always told me he was an alcoholic. She, you know, loved to say that. And so I knew that about him. And then he wrote me this letter about finding God. And I kind of put two and two together, and I'm like, maybe that's what he was doing. Maybe he was reaching out, and he was trying to make an amends to me. And now all of a sudden, I felt like he actually cared enough, and I felt differently towards him. And then I thought, like, what about my daughter, who I'm not in her life? You know, and I'm not in her life because of my drinking. You know, and he left because of maybe his drinking. Like, it doesn't make too much sense to be judging him for something that I did too. So then I started praying for him. And I started to experience something new, which was mercy. And so the pain that I had and the anger I had towards him, I stopped playing God as far as like the judgment with him. And I started to feel more remorse and empathy for him. And that totally changed my heart to the point where quite a few years ago, I was cleaning out this little end table, and I pick up this letter that was in there. It was a letter from my dad. Now, he wrote me that letter when I was 18. I've been locked up numerous times. I've been homeless. Like, the next place I go to, I don't even have the same two pairs of socks anymore. Like, I lose everything. And somehow, I opened this drawer, and there's that letter. And I'm like, I was just blown away. So I rifle into it. I start reading it. But I read it sober now. And I read it without the pain, without the judgment, without the hurt and the fear. And so he's just telling me about a brother and a sister that I have that I never met, and his side of the family, and what they all did and all this stuff. He actually died shortly after he wrote me that letter, about 3 months after that. He had cancer and all this stuff. And I got to that line that I hated him for, and I really read what it said. And it said, Michael, it's not that I didn't want you. It's that I was an alcoholic, and I'm an alcoholic. And I've been delivered of my alcoholism by my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, for the last 6.5 years. And on March 12th, I'll have 7 years sober. And I lost it. I started crying immediately. Because I used to always say March 11th was my sobriety date, because that was like what I had on my paper, right, when I went into treatment. March 12th was like the first day I woke up sober. So here's this guy, like, I used to think, like, oh, man, I'll never have anything in common with him. I'll never know him, like, all this stuff. How do I have the same sobriety date as him? Like, something like that. And, you know, all of these, like, throughout sobriety, I always had these cute little coincidences and stuff like that that would happen. Little, like, spiritual moments, whatever. You think about somebody, they text you or they call or you run into them. You think about, like, a situation that might happen like this and it kind of happens like that. You know, whatever. And I just kind of chalked them off. They're like, oh, that's neat, whatever. But this was too big, because it wasn't like, I didn't read this letter and was like, in the back of my head when I'm 18, I'm like, all right, you have an alcohol problem. I'm just telling you right now, on March 12th is when you're going to get sober, so you can read this letter and it looks like this big, you know, God moment to you. Like that, none of that happened. Like that was just, these are just things that were being put together for me. And to show me that I'm always being taken care of. And that God is always working in my life. So, I mean, that's awesome. It sounds great. But, like, how far do I take that? You know, and I'll forget that time and time again. And I'll make mistakes and I'll do all this different stuff. And, you know, right now, it's kind of like it's a tough time in my life. Like I said, in that girl that I drug through the dirt, I went back, made amends with her. We got engaged and then we got married. And I've been with her for 11 years. And we separated, like moved out into separate homes. We were going to get a divorce early this year because I blew up. I had a blow up with my anger. I wasn't doing an inventory of myself. Stopped doing that for a while. And I went kind of nuts. And it wasn't okay for her. And so first I moved out, then we moved to two separate places. And, I mean, we were done. I mean, we did everything. Like, went to the court, set up child support, living in two different places. She got a lawyer, was going to get divorce paperwork set up. I mean, we started dating other people. I mean, we even deleted each other from Facebook. I mean, that's how serious it was. And so, like, it was done. You know, it wasn't going to come back. But something happened where we both kind of around the same time just sort of made a decision with ourselves that, like, we're gonna try to trust God through this process. We're gonna try to go to Him and put our pride aside and see what God can do in our life. And so we made a decision where we started going to marriage counseling for like last like couple weeks. And we're going to stay in separate houses but try to commit ourselves to work on our marriage with God's help. We're gonna try to bring God in and make Him the forefront. Because basically what was going down, at least from my experience, is like I was making her my higher power. And like when we separated, she said she wanted a divorce, I was on the floor. I was crying my eyes out, begging God for help. Because I became so emotionally dependent on her. And I made her my God. And I was trying to get all this stuff from her that she couldn't give, which I was demanding from her in the relationship, causing so much tension. Same thing she was doing back with me. And luckily, we have this program, the both of us, and she's a big-time, like, seeker, like, always tries to grow spiritually. And so we both made this decision separately and then together to try to trust God. And, you know, coincidentally enough, her lease is over. It expired on our wedding anniversary date. So we'll see what happens. We'll see, you know. But my experience is that God definitely does for me everything that I can't do for myself. And, like, this thing was done. And this is just another experience where I'm getting to see that if I'll trust God, He will do for me the things that I could never, never do by myself. I couldn't wake up and just not drink. You know, I couldn't get blackout at the end of the night from, you know, and make a decision to not drink the next day. Like, I couldn't do any of these things that I've been able to do for the last 10 years by myself. And especially with, like, a relationship. We have kids together and trying to be a father, trying to be a worker, trying to be a husband. Like, sometimes stuff gets scary. But my answers has always come from when I go back and I ask God for even more help than I asked Him for before that. And if you're going through some stuff and you have some fear and you have like this like DEFCON 5, the world's ending, like it's over, Armageddon situation, maybe talk to me after the meeting. You know, I don't know that I can do too much to help, but I'll definitely listen. But I think maybe your experience might be like mine. Because how do we make it here tonight? How do we abandon ourselves to AA and to a God of our understanding for this hour? How do we practice that third step tonight? We didn't realize we did that. Things are being done for us that we couldn't do by ourselves. And the thing that you're going through, that you're holding on to, that you're probably going to try to take out of here and just have it be just you and it, that thing can be taken away too. That can be removed just as much as that problem that brought you in the door. But we have to surrender. And the beauty of what I found is we get to do that together. I don't have to do any of this stuff for myself. I don't have to be lonely anymore. What a gift I've been given. So I thank you for that tonight.